Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
And a good morning as we make our way well into May. And today is May the 4th. Can we get this out of the way before we even start with The Last Dance or NFL releasing the schedule, any of those things? Chris, can we get the May the 4th be with you right out of the way, right off the top of the show?
Dave, you don't want to embrace Star Wars?
I mean, I'm fine with embracing Star Wars. I think doing it in that way is a little cheesy, no?
May the 4th be with you?
Rick, right, we're done. That's out. We've come out with it.
No, you've come out with it. I'm not out with it. I'm not done with it.
So this is going to be a theme for you.
This is going to be a thing for me all day.
All right. Rick, are you in agreement?
I'm going to be company man today.
No, I'll leave it to Canty. I'm excited for Cinco de Mayo / Taco Tuesday. I'll come in tomorrow. I'm all set with May the 4th be with you.
Right.
I'm good.
So tomorrow's your day. Tomorrow's what you got circled on the calendar.
Yeah, tomorrow there'll be, allegedly there could be margaritas involved with tomorrow's show. I'm just saying.
Why allegedly? Why would you not absolutely? Wait, during the show?
Yeah, allegedly during the show. Who knows? You never know. I could be having a nice coffee. I could be having a delicious margarita. You'll never know.
I think we could know. Yourself.
So let me get this right, guys. You guys, and I'm just being objective here, because Rick, you're used to towing the company line as well. We're doing a show on ESPN Radio. ESPN is owned by ABC, Disney.
Yeah,
they also own Star Wars. Why would we not try to promote it? Why would we not talk about it on May the 4th?
Well, I don't think we need to talk about it. I think as long as one of us. Yeah, I think no, as long I mean, as yeah. one of us talks about it.
Well, I just want to throw a reference in there every now and again.
I got The Bachelor. Like, I'm doing my part.
Okay. So you're going to let me own this one?
I'm American Idol, baby.
All right. I'll own this one then. I'll own this in World News Tonight with David Muir. I got those.
I like David Muir as well. I'd like if we're going to draft here, I'd like to get involved in Jeopardy before you guys snag that off the table.
It's the beauty of having three people on the show. We got everything covered.
There you go. By the way, Rise of Skywalker now officially streaming on Disney Plus as of today.
There you go, Dave. There you go.
I can play.
All right. I like it.
I can play.
I like it.
All right. So last night, Last Dance, outstanding as usual. And then they have to go back to 93. And all this, oh, it's such a great program and it's so in depth and I'm learning so much and Michael's so cool. That pained me watching 93. Knicks win the first two games. You have the Starks dunk. Then Jordan goes to Atlantic City. I mean, they make it sound like he goes on a crazy bender, comes back. They don't lose another game to the Knicks. They win it in six. Awful, awful stuff.
Yeah, it was painful.
Awful.
Absolutely painful. It made me miss that kind of basketball, though. I mean, maybe a little bit overly physical, which, okay, I mean, I can understand. But as far as the intensity level, man, I mean, getting each other's faces, and that, again, I mean, was he fouled? Of course he was fouled, but it was the time. I mean, that was...
Who, Charles Smith?
Yeah, he was fouled. Yeah,
of course he was fouled.
Of course he was fouled. But that's, I mean, that's par for the course. That was one of the reasons why the New York Knicks were as good as they were. You know what I mean? They were a physical team. So I get why they didn't call it. But, I mean, seriously, like being in New York, having to watch that again, brutal. Brutal day.
Awful. Awful.
It's on the media, too, by the way. That's on the media.
100%.
Just let Jordan go gamble. Who cares? We don't have to bring it up. Do what he wants. Let him go to AC. You know what I mean? Like, you went about this the opposite. You should be doing what Lawrence Taylor's doing. Be sending things to his room. Keep him out all night. Make a big deal out of it. Come on. He doesn't need to be incentivized.
Yeah, the comments of a certain radio host at another station didn't age well when you looked at that docuseries last night. It just didn't. But they poked the sleeping bear, man. I mean, Michael Jordan, after going down 0-2, and then that story about him going to AC between games 1 and 2 came out, and you knew that in game 3 he was going to have something to prove. He was going to have his response. He said it in the episode last night. He let his game do his talking for him. And, you know, based on what happened in game 3, there was no doubt about how that series was going to end up.
I can't believe he missed five. What, did he miss five layups? I mean, he had five chances in low. Do you remember when we were at the Meadowlands and we did the show the first day or the second day, the Friday of March Madness, and we had Charles Smith sit with us?
Yeah, I do. I remember that. Yeah.
It took me every ounce of my being not just to be like, you couldn't have put the ball, you couldn't have just laid it in five chances.
He was trying. It wasn't like
he wasn't trying. God's sakes. I mean, that could have changed the entire complexion of the NBA if he would have hit one of those two shots, three shots, four shots, five shots. Just make one.
Yeah, but that's how many times have we spent here, I mean, talking about Eli's career, talking about Chris's championship, I mean, talking about, you know, the 2007 championship. I mean, all the little plays. I mean, now Asante Samuel wants to talk about how it's no fun. Well, it would have been more fun if maybe you caught that ball and it intercepted it, so you would have went 19-0, dummy. Keep your mouth shut. But, I mean, during the course of these runs, man, there's all these little moments, little plays that could have been the difference.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have breaks in the game go your way. But like Charles Barkley said last night, and talking about that 93 finals, when you have Michael Jordan on the court, all the breaks are going to go in that team's favor. I mean, Charles Barkley said it. He said it's the first time in his basketball career where he felt like even if he played his best, there was somebody on the court that was better than him. And that was true when you're looking at the guy everybody called after that Dream Team experience the best basketball player in the world. They referred to him as being the all-star among all-stars. I mean, that's how big Michael Jordan was. It was unanimous after that practice in Barcelona for the Dream Team that he was the best player in the NBA. That was clear. And I think that was probably one of the first times in the league's history where you had a consensus like this is the best player in the game, and it's really not a question when you ask the other guys that are the top all-stars.
That was actually one of my favorite parts about last night when Magic Johnson threw the ball into the stands.
I love that. I love the video of that, by the way. How great you have the best 12. It's funny that they always say also we had the best 11 basketball players in the world. They won't include Christian Laettner in that list. But, I mean, to watch video of games between the greatest in a little gym over in Monte Carlo, some of the footage is remarkable in the series.
Yeah, that's what makes the series so good, man. Oh, I mean, you've heard all the stories about it. They get a chance to see it. And the trash talking going back and forth, talking about the ticky-tack fouls. What was funny, too, was when they were posing, when it was Michael, Larry, and Magic posing for that picture. And then he's like, you can't get too close to Michael, otherwise you call for a foul. It was great.
Foul, yep.
But getting back to that Knicks point, too, though, Dave, I mean, when you look at that game three, the Knicks win the first two in New York. Go back game three. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jordan was 3 for 18 in that game three. I mean, he only had 22 points. He got most of his points on the free throw line. So, I mean, you can look at that moment, too. I mean, you lost the game where Jordan
only went
for 22.
You had opportunities. I mean, you're up 2-0. If you steal one of the two in Chicago, odds are you're going to win that series. Then all you had to do after you're tied at two is just hold serve, win games 5 and 7, and you couldn't do it. But something was said last night. Jordan said it. And he said, look, that Knicks team was good. But if you compare our team, and this is painful for me to say, Chris, but if you compare our team to their team, meaning the Bulls to the Knicks, we're just better. I think that's true. I think the Bulls were, and it's taken me a long time to get to this point, but I think the Bulls are just a better basketball team than the Knicks were.
No, the Bulls were a better basketball team, Dave, but there's also, I guess, you have a contrast in styles because the Knicks were one of those traditionally built teams. We're going to focus our offense around the big man, and we're going to play a physical brand of basketball, and we're just going to be tougher than you, whereas with the Jordan teams, I'm not going to say that they weren't physical or they weren't tough, but it was led by a guy that had the ball in his hands more often than not in Michael Jordan. And when you realize his ability to be able to impact the game on the offensive end to set the tone, I think that gives you a slight advantage. And it was really at that point where you would say that, you know, teams stopped being focused on being built around centers and the focus ultimately shifted to being built around guys that could score, guys that could have the ball in their hands at all times. And I think that like Michael Jordan showed you, you know, in the first couple of episodes of this series and even again last night, when he has the ball in his hands in the game on the line, you know, your team is in a pretty good spot. And that's exactly what happened, even though they were down 0-2 in that Eastern Conference Finals. It was a situation where there was no doubt that Jordan was going to be able to come back. He was going to be able to find a way to win. Even if he wasn't being able to play his best, he could dictate the terms of the game. And that's what they said. Steve Kerr talked about it. He said, you know, Michael Jordan was playing a different game than everybody else just because he could control the tempo of the game. And I think that that's something that we see even in today's NBA. But I think that style started when you had the emergence of Michael Jordan in the early 90s.
I think, too, what you got to recognize at that point in Jordan's career and that Bulls team, I mean, they already had played the best version of the New York Knicks and got over that hurdle, which was the Detroit Pistons. You know what I mean? Like, you could always rely on that experience. Like a team that tried to play you that tough. I mean, the best version of that team was the Pistons, and you got past that. So you could always lean on that as your previous experience, how to, you know, how to get through that.
But the Knicks were a good basketball team. I mean, you just look back with Ewing and Oakley and Mason and Starks. I mean, that was a good basketball team. But
yeah, it was a good basketball team, but it wasn't the Pistons. I mean, they already had beat. I mean, the best version of that was that Detroit Pistons team.
Yeah, the better version was the Pistons, but the Knicks were tough. They were so tough.
Yeah, that's fine, but they're not going to be. I mean, it wasn't going to be for Michael Jordan and that Bulls team. It wasn't going to be tougher than trying to beat the Pistons. They already done it. I mean, that's why I think he felt comfortable saying that. I mean, if both teams played their best, we were better.
That's true.
Because in his mind, they already had
their best. They were better.
Yeah. So, I mean, during the course of a playoff series, to have that kind of confidence, because you've already been there and you've done that, as opposed to, you know, a Knicks team that hadn't. You know what I'm saying? That's important when you're trying to, you know, win a seven-game series, to have that to lean back on.
You know, the Knicks went to the playoffs every single season in the 1990s.
Why do you need to bring that up?
I'm just bringing up positive memories.
To just frustrate everybody?
Every single season in the 1990s. Those are nice memories, no?
Yeah, those are nice memories. I mean, I would like them back. I mean, it's been far too long.
So here's a question for you. Let's, argument's sake, Knicks get by the Bulls. You think they would have beaten the Suns?
Knicks get by the Bulls. Do they beat the Suns?
Suns were good.
Level of confidence? Yeah, probably. I just think the amount of momentum, the amount of confidence you would have leading into that series, it would almost remind you of when, you know, Jordan finally got through the Pistons. And then once they got through the Pistons, it was a wrap.
Right.
And the finals was a no big deal. Would have been a tough series.
Very.
But, I mean, let's just, for the sake of us feeling better, let's pretend like if they did get past the Bulls,
yes, they would. Yes, absolutely they would have gotten by the Suns.
How ridiculous is it, though? Well, what are we doing? Why would we focus on it being a negative that Jordan went to AC? Like, I'd have been like, oh, that's great. I hope he continues to go to the casino. Maybe we should, you know, send a helicopter so we can get to AC, you know, quicker when he comes back. Why is the New York media criticizing him? Give him, are you going to give this guy motivation?
Because that's what you do. He's the biggest star in the world. And if you know he's in Atlantic City at 2 o'clock in the morning, it's certainly going to be front page, back page news.
Yeah, I guess. I think I would have tried to spin it in the opposite direction. I mean, you're talking about a guy who never met Tony Kukoc in his life and just decided that because Jerry Krause thought he was the future of the Chicago Bulls, that they were just gonna make his life miserable.
They were really unfair to him, by the way. Really unfair to him.
I heard this was the best. The best I've heard it said was Mike Wilbon. Jerry Krause didn't play, so they couldn't beat up on him. So the next best thing was to take it out on Tony
Kukoc.
Beat
up on all his guys.
Exactly right. Which I kind of respect in a little way, to be honest.
Yeah. No, it's true. But, I mean, here's a guy who you didn't even meet him. You didn't even know him. He's going
to
be your teammate. Yeah, but
you don't need to know him. All you need to know is that your general manager thinks that he's a heck of a basketball player, and they used a draft pick on him in the middle of their dynastic run.
And he was.
Yeah, I'm not saying that he wasn't a good basketball player, Dave, but in terms of what Jerry Krause was saying about him and how he viewed him, going as far as to say this dude is the future of the Chicago Bulls, I'm sure Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen felt away. And they went out there and they took it out on him. Now, you cannot like it. You can say they're unfair to him, but I mean, players feel away about the general manager because general managers in sports typically tell you their responsibility is to try to find somebody that's better than you that's also cheaper. Somebody that can replace you. And for Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, they felt like their general manager didn't recognize their true value. So
yeah,
I get
the way
it.
He put it was he's yeah, I mean the way he put it was he wasn't taking care of his own kids. Because that was the whole Pippen thing and the money, you know what I'm saying? So I gotta understand why they felt the way about it. How about when Krause asked Jordan for a cigar? Jordan goes, no, it'll stunt your growth.
they were so nasty to him. But he was so good. Like one of the things, and there's a lot of little nuanced things in this documentary, but we don't give credit to Jerry Krause. He drafted Kukoc in the second round. He was over there scouting him, and I don't know how commonplace that was back in the day. Like, this guy was – he brought in Grant. They brought in Rodman. I mean, you look at the shooters that they brought in to surround this team. Jerry Krause was a terrific general manager that I think we lose sight of because Michael and Scottie were just so good around him.
Well, I mean, we're saying he's a terrific general manager because he found the complementary pieces to go along with the superstar, which is Michael Jordan. If you don't have Michael Jordan, then nobody's talking about how good of an executive Jerry Krause is.
Okay, Jerry Krause didn't find Michael Jordan. If you don't trade for Pippen and draft Kukoc,
I'm not saying that those moves weren't necessary in order to win a championship, but the most important part of the dynastic run was Michael Jordan.
Of course.
That was it. So Michael Jordan wanted that respect from the general manager, but you got the general manager going on record and saying players are nice, but it's organizations that win championships. And he keeps doubling down on that statement when Michael Jordan has been the biggest agent of change for the Chicago Bulls team. That's the part of it where Jordan and Pippen had trouble reconciling. They couldn't square that circle. And it still doesn't make sense when you hear how adamant Jerry Krause is about how important it is for the organization, about how important it is to have the infrastructure in place. That's all great. I'm not saying that those things did not play a role in being able to have sustained success, but the most important part of it was Michael Jordan, and Jordan didn't feel like he was getting that respect from the GM. Now, whether that's real or not, we'll never know. But from Jerry Krause's commentary, you could understand why there would be some friction in that relationship.
I would actually love to hear from Jerry Krause. Unfortunately, obviously, he's unable to, I mean, God rest his soul. But, I mean, I wonder how much of that, you know, knowing who Michael Jordan was, what motivated Michael Jordan. I mean, and part of that, you know, last night, too,
was tweaking him.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, Jerry Krause liked Dan Marley. And how did that work out for Dan Marley? I mean, you're still talking about, you know, firing Doug Collins, right, and bringing in Phil Jackson, which mm-hmm. turned out to be a great move. You know, moving on from Charles Oakley, who was, you know, Michael Jordan's closest friend on the team. Like, I mean, he did... I mean, maybe he stepped too far over the line as far as, you know, his ego was concerned. But, you know, let's face it, man. Sometimes great players don't necessarily know what's in their best interest all the time. And it's up to the people making the decisions to kind of, you know, make some tough moves that end up working out. But, I could make an argument for Dave in this case, and I could make an argument for Chris in this case. But, I mean, I think my biggest takeaway is Jerry Krause was really good at what he did and was responsible for those championships. Not as much as the players, obviously, because they play, but no. I mean, he made some unbelievable moves.
I mean, he traded for Pippen, a kid from Central Arkansas. He traded for him. He got Rodman. He got Grant. Like, you look at the pieces. Kukoc was a second-round selection. It's almost a throwaway pick at this point now in the NBA. And I'm not saying that Jordan wasn't the number one factor. Of course he was. You're not winning anything without him. But the team that Jerry Krause put around him, surrounded him with, was a hell of a basketball team.
No, it was a hell of a basketball team. And you know what? It's like one of those things that we think about is, okay, what motivated these guys to have that level of success? Who's to say that Jerry Krause, because he had that type of mentality, wasn't a part of the chip that Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and the rest of the Bulls put on their shoulder in order to go out there and create this Bulls dynasty? Like, I mean, that has to be a part of the conversation as well. Now, whether he intended to do that or not, the motivation was real. And it ended up working out to everybody's benefit because they did something, well, Michael Jordan did something that his contemporaries never did. Like, I mean, you start talking about the players that were the best in the game when Michael Jordan came into the league. Larry Bird, Isaiah Thomas, Magic Johnson. None of those guys won three straight championships. None of them. Michael Jordan was able to pull that off. And I think that's something that says something that he felt like separated him from those other guys.
I don't think it's much different. I mean, I guess it's a little different because, you know, you're talking about a guy who's the GM and the coach. But, I mean, it is, you know, similar in certain regards to, you know, how Bill Belichick runs things with the Patriots. You know, never really given, you know, Tom Brady the credit that Tom Brady felt like he deserved. Maybe that's part of, like, you know, the mind games of pushing Tom Brady to... Mm-hmm. You know, to where he's at now. I mean, getting rid of players a year early. I mean, making some moves, Lawyer Malloy. I mean, you name it. I mean, that cutthroat aspect.
Right. They moved on from Doug Collins when he went to after he went to a conference championship.
Yeah. I mean, those are tough moves. I mean, and again, who knows the psychology of it? Because I think that's a big part of it. I think that's what made Phil Jackson so great, too, was the psychology. Did you notice the one thing that I thought was interesting last night? And maybe I'm watching it too closely. They showed Jerry Krause in his office, and he's got the Inspector Gadget, you know, the Inspector Gadget stuffed Bennington Bear in his office.
No.
in the corner. I was like, what? What is that? Why does he have a stuffed bear in his office? No, I think I'm watching it too closely.
800-919-3776. People all lined up, want to talk about The Last Dance. Let's do it with them. 800-919-3776. Spike in Jersey. Spike, lead us off on a Monday. You're first up on 98.7.
Good morning, my friends. I hope you all had a nice weekend on this beautiful weekend. And then it ended with this garbage I had to revisit. I was
you didn't enjoy this either last night, did you, Spike?
No. We talked about this Saturday, the disdain for the Bulls. I will call it a draw. Here's what happened. In those days, we had a season ticket plan. Three buddies and myself, we always split the parking. We parked right across the street. We got there early. We grabbed the same thing, burger and fries, and we walked up, and we were psyched. And we run into Hugh Hollins, who was refereeing that game. I forget the other two officials. So, of course, my big trap, I said, call it tight tonight, yo. You know, and if you look at that box score, I'm sure you guys can pull it up. The Knicks, I believe, missed 15 free throws that night. So put the Charles Smith misses into perspective. 15 free throws they missed. Case closed to me. You can't miss that many free throws. And if you look at Jordan, had a triple-double in that game. No one ever talks about it. They didn't have so many of them. But everything came up. I had a nice meal. My wife last night was beautiful. We were eating a nice, beautiful meal. And I got to watch that garbage again. It's just, it's so bad. It was so bad. But I will take some of the onus off of Charles Smith. They're not calling that foul. They're just not calling it, guys. And I believe the Chicago bench didn't even score in that game. Well, maybe had a couple of points. It was just the epitome of being a Knicks fan all my life. That's the worst memory. Even Game 7 in Houston wasn't as bad because Game 6 was so good. It was the three-day wait in between. So you're right, Dave. You hate this guy as much as anybody, but it's a dead heat with me and you. And he's a great player. He's so smooth.
And nobody ever denied that. No, and thanks for the call, Spike. Nobody ever denied that. Jordan in that game, did you know how many assists he had in that game? Chris, take a guess. How many assists he had in that game?
I'm going to say he had 13 assists.
14 assists. 29 points, 14 assists, 10 rebounds. That's unbelievable. Played 45 minutes in that game.
I mean, Dave, you're talking about somebody that could impact the game in almost every single way, whether you want to talk about scoring, whether you want to think about facilitating, being a playmaker, whether it's on the defensive end. I mean, it's nothing that Michael Jordan didn't have in his arsenal. Like, this is a complete basketball player. And on top of that, he might be the most motivated guy every time he steps foot on the court.
Which is awesome, which I do love. I love when he's shooting quarters with that security guard at Chicago Stadium.
The albino pimp?
Yeah, the Stan Albeck of security guards. Yeah.
He looks like Chris Broussard with a perm.
That was some hairdo, huh?
No, you know my favorite part is that too, is when Jordan goes, okay, I'll give you four to my one, and then on the first toss he wins it, and then Jordan's all pissed off. He's like,
yeah, he's like, well, it rolled.
Yeah, and he's like, well, your money's gonna roll into my pocket.
That guy was funny.
I love that guy.
But it just shows you. And they even asked him, like, do you have a gambling problem? He's like, I don't have a gambling problem, and that could be debated certainly. He's like, I have a competition problem. And I love it. I love the fact that everything he does, everything he has to do, everything that he's ever done is I'm going to win or I'm going to lose, and it's all about competition. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. But, I mean, you can see, I mean, mentally how that would wear on you, though. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
Like, if you lived every single day of your life like that, where everything had to be a competition.
Everything. Everything. And then they showed you kind of some of the intricacies into his life. It's like, and I know you guys have dealt with it to a certain extent, but, I mean, you can't even be yourself. Like, once you leave your hotel room, you are now, like, everything is critiqued. You're mobbed. You have people that just want to be near you and literally touch you and have you speak to them and their kids. And it's unbelievable to think you could have any semblance of a normal life. And he probably couldn't with that level of fame.
It would have been a lot worse had you had social media.
Much.
But, I mean, you know, Michael Jordan was larger than life, man. I mean, he created this figure and then had the ability through his play to live up to it. And so, yeah, it's one of those things where you're like, most guys, they can talk the talk, but they can't walk the walk. No, Michael Jordan could talk the talk, and then he could actually go out there and play the game better than anybody else on the planet. Like, that's what made him special, man. And he told you he was focused on basketball. That was the only thing that he was locked in on. Single-mindedness. It wasn't about anything else. He was focused on being the very best basketball player that he could be. And that's, it wasn't about anything else for him. He said it. I could average 2 points and three rebounds and nobody would care about who Michael Jordan is. But it's because of my play that everybody else is interested. Because of my play, I have all of these opportunities outside of basketball. So he never lost sight of that. And that's hard to do, especially when you're at the top, Dave.
Yeah, that's one of the hardest things, too, to tell young players, right? Especially now with social media and everything else, everyone concerned about their brand, is that, you know, his mindset was, my success on the court, winning championships, that'll build the brand. I don't need to go out of my way to build it. Like, all those opportunities will come because I'm great at what I do. And by the way, I mean, shame on Adidas. You can't find a way to get a sneaker made from Michael Jordan.
Or Converse.
Converse.
They want him to be the face of the sneaker department.
But Dolores Jordan really founded Nike, huh?
Oh, my goodness, right?
she was the real mastermind behind it.
Yeah, you're going to at least take the meeting. He didn't even want to take the meeting, he said, with Nike.
Well, that's because he liked Adidas at the time, Dave. I mean, he didn't want to do that. Nike was thought of as, what, a track shoe company?
Yeah.
But, I mean, listen, it was revolutionary in the way that they branded him, and I guess that goes along with what his agent, David Falk, was trying to sell him on, you know, being the first athlete in a team sport to be branded like an athlete in an individual sport. I think they talked about Arthur Ashe last night having a signature shoe and a racket. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that we want to try to brand Michael Jordan in that way. It's just that the shoe companies of the day, that being Converse and Adidas, they didn't feel like they could fit him into their strategy in terms of the NBA guys that they would have. And Nike was like, listen, we'll give you a $250,000 sneaker deal, which was huge for a rookie. And they ended up getting paid back by that, I don't know how many times over, based on how that shoe did in his rookie season. I think they said they projected that they would make $3 million on his shoe in his first year, and it went over $100 million.
Yeah. I think they said that he was going to make over $3 million by his third or fourth year.
Oh, yeah, something like that, yeah.
They played it out, and they said he made $123 million on the shoe in year one. So it really is unbelievable. I don't know if you guys saw this really sad news from the world of football. Don Shula has passed away. Of course, the longtime Dolphins and Colts head coach at the age of 90 years old. The Dolphins put out a statement on Coach Shula. Don Shula was the patriarch of the Miami Dolphins for 50 years. He brought the winning edge to our franchise and put the Dolphins in the city of Miami in the national sports scene. Our deepest thoughts and prayers go out to Marianne along with his children, Dave, Donna, Sharon, and Mike. So, I mean, when you think of the NFL guys right off the bat, I mean, you think of old-time coaches, you think of Lombardi, you think of Landry, Don Shula, granted, came more recently as well, but absolutely one of those guys.
Well, he's the winningest coach of all time, Dave.
Yeah.
That's all you have to say. Who has the most wins as a head coach in the National Football League? It's Don Shula. And I think he's better than Bill Belichick by over 40 games. Like, that's how great he was as a coach. And I mean, listen, you're talking about that undefeated Miami Dolphins team. I mean, that's still the standard. Like, that's still the team. Like, they are the only team to never lose a game in an NFL season in the modern era. So, I mean, I don't know if you can assign enough, you know, adjectives, superlatives, whatever you want to say about how great Don Shula was, but he was certainly one of the revolutionary minds in our game. He changed the way that football is played. And you see elements of that even in today's game.
Yeah. I mean, and he changed it with the way that they used Dan Marino. Remember, passing was never such a key cog to the game of football. Dan Marino comes up in 1984, and all of a sudden, he's thrown for 5,000 yards in a season, which is completely unprecedented. Everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases, guys. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, and your mouth. Stay home, of course, when you're sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN New York. All right, let's get to the calls. People lined up want to talk about The Last Dance episodes 5 and 6. We have 7 and 8. Coming up this Sunday and then 9 and 10 the following Sunday. So let's get to some of these calls here, 800-919-3776. Let's go to Train in the Truck. Train, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I hope you guys had a good weekend. Rick, I hope you wore some pants while you were barbecuing this weekend. Listen, I just wanted to say, I think that the way Jordan never got hurt through those times is crazy. And I feel like he, you know, they always say, oh, you know, some players can play in every era, this era. I think he's the only one you could say 100% could have played in this era with the way these guys cry for fouls and flops and all that. I don't know. What do you guys think of that?
I don't agree with that. I think that Isaiah Thomas could have played in this era. I think that Scottie Pippen could have played in this era. I think all these guys could have played in this era. Well, Jordan was unbelievable.
That's only 100% to me. That's all I'm saying. I agree with you, but I'm saying he's only that short shot. The way he played, the talent, the way he you know, withheld the beatings and all of that stuff. You know, I think he laughed at some of these players in a closed room doing the guys, you know, cry for fouls like Harden and stuff like that. That's all.
Yeah, but well, I don't think that right means as far as that's concerned, right? I mean, as far as the guys just being babies and thanks for the call. But as far as, you know, the game of the early to mid to late 80s into the 90s, I think there's a whole host of guys, Chris, that the game would have translated to now.
Well, Dave, they have the term all-time great for a reason. It doesn't matter what time they played in, they were probably going to be a good player. So, I mean, this is not something like football where you're talking about bigger, stronger, faster athletes, even though the guys that are playing now – it could be argued that they're more athletic. I mean, basketball is a game of skill, and clearly Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson were some of the most skilled players the game has ever seen. I'd hate to think that they would only be successful in just their era of basketball, the 80s and the 90s. I'd like to think if those guys came along today, they would still be all-star caliber players. Like, they would still be dominant forces in the game. I just don't see how anybody could say that this guy has to be confined to this era in order to be considered great.
Yeah, I think the only argument you could make, I mean, that people try to make in support of this era is that athletes are bigger, stronger, faster, more athletic. I don't think that, I mean, from what I've seen in going back in memory, I don't think that Jordan was any less of an athlete than we see now.
No, a Karl Malone wasn't, you know, this level of athlete. I don't buy into that.
No, Karl Malone was a physical specimen. Yeah. I mean, if you want to make the argument players from now would have a hard time with that physicality.
I would almost go that way. The players from now would have a hard time going back to play in the late 80s, early 90s, and the guys then would have playing now.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the stronger argument would be for me, I mean, if you were a, you know, if you were a pro LeBron guy, a pro LeBron guy, would that, I mean, LeBron at his size, his strength, his physicality would have tons of, I mean, just as much success back then as he is having it now. I mean, are you going to physically intimidate LeBron James at,
no,
what, 6'9", 275 pounds?
No.
No.
No. But great is great. Like, great is great, whether it's 30 years ago, whether it's today. LeBron would have been great back then, and Isaiah Thomas and Karl Malone and Scottie Pippen and Charles Barkley and all those guys would be great now.
Yeah, I just think you're talking great. It's just levels of greatness.
Yes. I would like to see a guy like James Harden play in 1989, though.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I think Russell Westbrook, I mean, you could take him from now and put him back then and he'd have success. I mean, you're still talking about it. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you see guys that now have success. I mean, Draymond Green is a lesser version of Charles Barkley. Kawhi Leonard is a lesser version of Michael Jordan. I mean, you take Michael Jordan and put him in today's game during his prime years. Forget it.
Yeah.
And it's not like he wouldn't work on a, you know, if all of a sudden now there was such an emphasis on the three-point shot.
Right.
Which he got
and
better
it's not
at
like
later
he
in
was,
his career.
I mean, this idea that he couldn't shoot the three. I mean, they showed, I think it was last night, in that game one against the Blazers when he had, what, 35 points in the first half? And he hit 6 3-pointers? So stop with this notion that he couldn't shoot the ball from distance.
That was a shrug game. Just taking it on Clyde.
Ugh. Awful. All right, let's go to Joe. Joe at work. Joe, you're next up on 98.7. What's up, Joe?
Hello. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Good, good. How are you guys, man?
We're okay.
Good, good. First of all, I want to congratulate you guys. You're very knowledgeable. You know your stuff. As far as the Knicks, you know, a lot of people fell in love with the Knicks back then because that was a really tough team, you know, and we had the best coach in Pat Riley. You know, if you look at that, at least three of them, you had Ewing, Oakley, Mason. Who was going to mess with those guys? you know?
Yeah, nobody was.
Yeah, as far as what are you talking about? As far as if they
they're
played
toughness.
In today's era, or just
no, they're toughness.
Physical. That's yeah. why New Yorkers fell in love with that Knicks team, you know. And they had their chance, but you know, Jordan was in the way.
Yeah, every year Jordan was in the way.
Jordan was in the way every year.
Yeah, I think there was something special about that team. I'd agree with that, but I think Chris, I think winning in New York, like if they outscored you 145-138 every game, and you won 58 games, Knicks fans would love that. If you do it by, you know, pounding you into submission and allowing you to score 75 points a game, like whatever equates to winning is what the New York fan is going to fall in love with.
No, you're right, Dave, but I think there's something to be said for a team that has a blue-collar workman-like mentality in a city filled with blue-collar workman-like folk. I think they very much endeared themselves to the working class in this city, and that's why, you know, people still think back fondly about John Starks and Anthony Mason and Charles Oakley, Xavier McDaniel, all of those guys. I mean, it's a situation where they might not have been considered star players, but they had a star-like quality in terms of how they endeared themselves to the fan base, how they embraced that reputation as being the bullies on the block or the team that was going to be the most physical on the floor every single time. And that really is kind of the embodiment of what their head coach, Pat Riley, stood for. I mean, Pat Riley was a no-nonsense guy. He wanted to preach toughness. I mean, it was just one of those situations where it was the perfect fit at the perfect time. It just so happens that they had the best player in the world in their conference, and that stood in their way of going into the NBA Finals seemingly every single year.
Yeah, they didn't even mention the 92 team, Rick. The 92 team that went to game, that was, I think there was two teams that ever took Jordan and the Bulls to game sevens. I think it was the Pacers, I think 97, and then it was the Knicks in 92 and with the Xavier McDaniel. That team didn't even get mentioned last night.
No, they didn't get mentioned, but I mean, we recognize that. And I think to Chris's point and to your point, I mean, winning is ultimately the most important. But, I mean, you're not going to win all 82 games. So there is something to be said about, you know, how you lose, when you lose, and the fact that you're playing the way that, you know, those Knicks teams played. They were going to make you earn it, man. You weren't going to go to one of these games and watch and be disappointed. Like, you watch some of these Knicks games and some of these losses, and it's like you got guys between, you know, LeBron James playing flip bottle on the side. You know what I mean? It's like you're a laughing stock. You know what I'm saying?
You were not playing flip bottle at the Garden as you were beating up on the Knicks back in 1993. No.
No, we were going to take a piece of you. Like, you're going to beat us, you were going to earn every second of it. And I think just fan bases in general, I think respond well to teams like that.
Let's go to AJ in the Bronx. AJ, you're next up on 98.7, pal.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Not much. You have a terrific voice, by the way.
I'm listening, and I'm not trying to start nothing, but I don't see what everybody else sees. I guess I'm in the minority in this. I'm close to 40 years old, so I caught the 90s and I caught this era. I just don't think it's even comparable. The guys today are just so much better, and then this argument about they couldn't play back in the day, it was tougher. Like, guys, you adjust to what you're playing with. LeBron James and Giannis would put those guys in a casket. Let's be honest.
No, I don't agree with that. I don't agree. I think that great is great. I think that those guys, you don't think that Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Karl Malone, Patrick Ewing, Barkley, all those, John Stockton, would be great if they suited up right now.
Yes, if we go to the top 10 players in the 90s, yes, I absolutely. But when you go to the B players,
You went to Giannis and LeBron.
Yes, exactly. But this is what I'm saying to you. It's like you're watching the players play today, and you're watching, and I watched the games back then, and I was a fan of Jordan, and it's not even comparable to what they're going. And this whole defensive myth, like, I'm watching the games. They're letting them, besides the Pistons and the Knicks, they're letting the guys ride right by them and score. Like, this thing about this tougher era, come on, man. It's not even the same athletes playing. It's not even fair to compare them. That's all I'm saying. It's not fair. It doesn't even look right.
But it's all relative, man. But it's time out. It's all relative. And Don, listen, I mean, you're talking about the one play, you know, the Phoenix Suns game where Michael Jordan just, you know, looks like he could have walked to the bucket and laid it in. I mean, the reality is, we got Allen Houston on, is that it was a tougher brand of basketball. There were less fouls called. There was more defense played.
There was hand-checking.
I mean, it's the same thing. Yeah, but it's the same thing in the NFL. I mean, if you ask any of those quarterbacks, Dan Marino.
It's never been easier to throw the football than now.
Exactly right. Easy. So how would their numbers look like in this? You know what I'm saying? Like, how would their numbers all of a sudden now look in this era? It's all relative, man. You take the best players from each generation, like Dave keeps saying and Chris keeps saying. That's why they're the greats, because their games would translate era to era.
Any era.
They'd find a way to figure it out.
But Dan, I don't know Marino how you could say anything.
7,000 yards now.
What's that, Dave?
Yes.
I said Dan Marino would throw for 7,000 yards now.
Yeah, he threw for a whole lot of yards. But I guess the whole point that Rick is making, it feels like this is what he's saying, is that you can never prove this definitively either way. But if you're looking at guys' careers and how dominant they are, I mean, you'd like to think that if they were to be in this era, they could adjust to whatever style of play and they could be able to find a way to be just as effective as they were in their own respective era. That's the point. I mean, I just... To say that if Michael Jordan played today, that he wouldn't be able to compete with LeBron James and Giannis and Antetokounmpo, that sounds absolutely ridiculous. You can never prove it, but I mean, just to say that a guy that even players back then said was the greatest player during that time, like the fact that he wouldn't be able to be competitive now, I just don't feel like that's fair.
Outside of the Lakers in the Bucks, there are three teams we look at now in the NBA that could win the championship this year if the season restarts. You give me the three teams.
Those two teams.
The Clippers.
And the Clippers. Okay. Yeah. So let's take the Clippers, for example. Is Kawhi Leonard a better athlete? Is he a better player than Michael Jordan?
Is Kawhi? No.
No. He's not.
No.
And Kawhi doesn't shoot. I mean, Kawhi doesn't shoot a ton of threes. His game is similar to Jordan's. And I would take Michael Jordan. Is Paul George more athletic than Scottie Pippen?
No.
Similar players, right?
Yeah.
And then you have, I mean, either take Horace Grant or take Dennis Rodman. I mean, that's your big three.
Yeah, I think they match up with anybody in any era.
Yeah, see, I mean, that's it. You can never prove it, but I don't look at Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and think to myself, wow, compared to Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, they are supremely, supremely physically better.
No. But I don't see that, like, throughout. Look at the league now. I mean, you could go through any team. Look at the Hornets. Look at some of these teams. They don't have a lot of guys that really move the needle for you. So if you're going to compare it to, you know, lesser teams back then, of course it's not going to look great. But I could sit here and rattle off 30 guys right now that were great in that era, and it would translate to this era as well.
Yeah, but that's the beauty of sports, isn't it?
Well, that's the conversation that's so attractive, because you never know.
Yeah, exactly,
and it's opinion-based.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know how, first of all, I mean, the rules, how coaches want to play. I mean, yeah, the great coaches adapt. I mean, you just brought up Don Shula. You're going to adapt to what you have. I mean, Dan Marino was maybe the greatest thrower of the football we've ever seen. So what are you going to do, just hand the ball off? No, I got Dan Marino. I'm going to throw the hell out of it.
Yeah, but in 1984, to go out there and say you go out there and throw the ball all over the place is a really progressive kind of a head coach.
And I guess that's, to me, Dave, a true sign of greatness, to be able to change the actual sport that you're playing. Like, there is no doubt that Michael Jordan changed the way that basketball was played. Like, you can see it fundamentally. It was a game that was oriented around the big man. Even Walt Frazier talked about it in one of the first episodes. He said that, you know, as great as a talent Michael Jordan is, he can't win without a big man. Like, that was the thought process back then. And that has completely shifted in terms of where we were then and then where we are now. And that changed in large part due to what Michael Jordan did. So I don't understand how you can strip away his greatness and say that he would not have been great, he would not have been dominant in this era when the guy changed the way the game was fundamentally played.
Yeah. It's surprising to me that anyone would have that tack, that Jordan wouldn't be completely dominant in this era. All right. The UFC makes its return this coming Saturday, May the 9th, and it's going to feature a double main event. Not the single main event, Rick, that you've become accustomed to. The double main event live on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. First, see number one ranked lightweight contender Tony Ferguson square off against number four Justin Gaethje. Then a bantamweight bout between Henry Cejudo and Dominic Cruz. UFC 249 finally here, and 98.7 ESPN getting you ready with the Sweat at Home contest. Here's your chance to score a 98.7 UFC prize pack. We're asking our listeners to send us an innovative in-home workout video that will judge on creativity and clarity. Make sure to keep your submission to under 30 seconds. Tweet us your video with our show handle at DCR on ESPN and use the hashtag 987SweatAtHome. Again, tweet it to at DCR on ESPN. Use the hashtag 987SweatAtHome. To see the official rules, go to ESPNNewYork.com. Here at DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, we're getting you ready for UFC 249 on May 9th on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. If I were to send that video into you right now, I shouldn't tell you this. I ran a little bit yesterday, and now I'm hobbled.
Yeah. I actually had another idea. If you're going to make a video that lasts less than 30 seconds, I have the perfect activity for you.
Do you? Really?
You have to bring Sherry. Sherry would probably have to be involved. But
oh, really?
I mean, 18 seconds max.
You'd need to go widescreen, though.
How'd you hurt yourself running? Explain to me how you hurt yourself running.
So I'm making the kids run. So Alex, poor kid, can barely walk now because he ran 4.5 miles on Saturday. Oh. 9 years old. That seems like it might be too much. So
maybe.
Well, it's not my fault though, because Sherry came out with this. I expect the team to stay in shape for lacrosse. So she sent.
What do you call Dave? What do you call in your backyard now? The Santa Anita racetrack? I mean, what are you trying to do to this poor kid?
Well, he did on the treadmill. But she sent this thing out where there's like 100 activities you have to do for the lacrosse team, and the first one to get it done gets, you know, their name in the light, so to speak. So one of them was you have to run a half mile in less than 5 minutes, fine. Run a mile in less than 10 minutes, fine. And run a 5K. So because he's so crazy competitive, he had to do all of them on Saturday. Oh. So he ran 4.5 miles. And then probably to my mistake, I made him run yesterday as well. And at the end he goes, Dad, my legs are killing me. I said, you know what? Because you did such a great job and you're feeling uncomfortable, I'm going to let you watch me run. I'm going to get on the treadmill. I'm going to run 2 miles. So I ran 2 miles. I did it too fast. I was running like, and I know it's not that fast, but I was running like 9-minute miles, 9.5-minute miles. And now I can't walk that well.
You got shin splints? What do we got going on?
Like a hamstring strain or something back there.
You got the ham dog, huh?
It's terrible.
A hamstring strain from running a 9-minute mile.
Yes, it's pathetic, right?
Okay. All right.
I'm not making excuses for it. I shouldn't have brought it up.
I don't think it's that bad. I mean, usually walk on the treadmill. I hate running, so I'll make every excuse in the world for you. I don't know how I'd fare for a two-mile run.
Oh,
I may be hobbled.
And he's like, see, I told you it's not so easy to run that far. I'm like, yeah, he ran a lot further than me.
Yeah, he ran 4.5 miles on top of what else? Did he do a mile too? So how many miles did he run in one day? Six?
No, he ran 4.5 miles because it's a 5K. So 5K is 3.1, then another 1.5. So 4.6 on Saturday, and then I had him run another 2 yesterday.
Ugh.
But he's only 9.
He probably has shin splints.
He goes, I've never had every muscle hurt like it hurts right now. So those massage gun things?
Yep.
So we have one of those I was using on him. He's screaming.
Yeah, get him in a cold tub. Take some ice, throw it in a tub for this poor kid.
Poor kid.
You're working him too. I'm sure he probably can't wait to get out of the house now with how you're running.
He's desperate to do anything. Can I go back to school, please? Right? The AD of LIU, Dr. William Martinoff, will join us right at 12. And they are announcing, Rick, I don't know if you saw this, a new ice hockey team at LIU CW Post.
Yeah, I did see it, Dave. Actually got it. A bunch of my buddies in the area actually just the last couple of days have been sending me all sorts of fun texts.
By the time we're done with him, Chris, we have to have Rick employed as the new head hockey coach at LIU.
It only makes sense, right, Dave?
Yeah, of course.
Rick is always talking about how much talent is out there on the island in terms of prep hockey, and it just feels like that should be a program that should be in the center of all of it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see.
Absolutely.
Dave, if you made that happen, and now if anyone could make it happen, it would be you. I mean, if you made something like that happen, it would be safe to say that I'd be indebted to you for life.
And how comfortable are you with me pushing the envelope here?
Very comfortable. And potentially, could lead to you having golf and dinner with your favorite football player of all time, your favorite athlete of all time.
All right. So 12 o'clock is going to be must listen to your radio, because by the time we're done at 12:10, 12:12, 12:15, I think you'll have the job sewn away.
Listen, from your lips to God's ears, man. I mean, if you have that much confidence, I guess I'll jump on board with you.
I'm gonna push for it. I'm gonna push for it in a big way. All right, let's bring him in. Andy from Merrick. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, guys. I know Dave cannot get enough Michael Jordan.
Ugh.
So, yes, we got some Michael Jordan-related questions for you. Starting with Chris, as always. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Andy. How you doing?
I'm great. Michael Jordan ranks number 3 on the all-time steals list. Can you tell me who ranks 1 and 2?
Ooh.
All-time steals 1 and 2.
Both featured in the documentary last night.
Are we counting crab legs?
Flavor.
Yeah, but if you're going to count crab legs, Jameis Winston's got to be.
Stop. Why are you doing that, Rico? Why? 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 I don't understand.
Yeah, you understand. You understand. One of them, I believe, Andy, right, played with the Knicks and the Nets, yes?
Yes. Uh-huh. New York flavor to number 2. That's correct.
All right. Let me see here. I know John Stockton has got to be on that list.
Number 1.
Andy, I'm having a hard time. They were on the documentary last night.
Yeah.
Damn, Dave just gave you a massive hint.
I think he wore number 5, I believe. He was an older player.
Hold on, hold on. Oh, he didn't have his prime with the Knicks, though, right?
No. Nope.
No.
Okay. So it's got to be Jason Kidd then.
There you go.
You got it.
Yeah. Like Jason.
Nice.
Very well done. Beautiful.
All right, Rick. So most people know that Olajuwon and Sam Bowie were taken ahead of Michael Jordan at the number 3 pick. Can you tell me who was the number 4 pick in the 1984 draft?
I love this question.
Of course you love it because you know it.
Michael's teammate.
Ooh, Michael's teammate. That's a good little clue, David.
That's a misleading hint, Dave.
How is it a misleading hint? At college, he was Michael's teammate.
Oh, college teammate, yes.
Yeah.
Michael's college. I'm going to go with...
Tiger Woods' favorite restaurant.
Oh, Sam Perkins. That's a that's pyramid style, can't
they? There you go. That was beautiful.
All right, Dave. Michael Jordan.
Oh, God.
Never had a quadruple double. In fact, only one guard in NBA history.
Alvin Robertson.
Who was drafted the same year as Jordan in 84. Wow, you couldn't even let me finish the question.
Wait, am I right?
Yes.
Oh, God, I'm good. How beautiful is that?
The smartest man alive!
All right, we got a bonus question for you because you did that too quickly. For the late, great Don Shula, drafted out of John Carroll University.
London Fletcher.
No, yes, London Fletcher was there as well. What NFL team drafted him in the 9th round, Don Shula?
Ooh.
1951 draft.
Anybody have any idea?
Let's start narrowing this thing down. Come on, Dave. Get that beautiful mind. This is the first time in the history of the show I think we could go 4-0.
I know the answer. I was wondering if you guys had any idea.
What do you mean? It's a show question. Just give the answer.
You have no idea.
I have no idea. Why would I know where Don Shula was drafted? Man.
It's Don Shula.
The only reason I know is because I have a packet of information on Don Shula that was printed out for me. The only reason I know.
It would be a team that's been in the league forever but never won a Super Bowl.
Yep. It's also the team where the coach that's trailing him in total wins started his coaching career.
Cleveland.
Yes.
Cleveland. The Browns.
Yeah, there you go. See, Ricky.
You got it, guys.
You didn't know you knew it, but you knew it.
All right. 4-0 today, guys. Stay healthy. I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you. Well done.
You guys give me clues like that. I mean, I'm telling you right now, we want to do a station pyramid. I like our chances at this point with these clues.
Love the pyramid, password, any of those game shows. Absolutely love them.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.